All right, welcome into the fan pregame here on Sportsnet for the next 30 minutes. Then we will shift to Sportsnet 590, The Fan, for the evening as we have Maple Leafs and Florida Panthers here on the radio. Jess and I will do our pregame show starting at 6:30. We'll have Gord Stellick join us. It's a big game as the Leafs host the Panthers, and they're jockeying for top of the Atlantic. They're going to play each other a few more times. So this will be part one of a three-part series.
Yeah, it could be like the four-point game trope or just like this mini-series between Florida and Toronto potentially deciding the Atlantic Division. So game one of three still to come tonight. Very, very important games, Florida and Toronto down the stretch. And yeah, we'll see what happens in game one.
On the network, we've got Oilers and Devils. That's a 7:30 start, followed by a doubleheader there of Caps and Kings. Ovi looking to continue his goal-scoring prowess, and he last game we thought he would score you. I think it was one of your best bets. He had an opportunity at an empty netter and passed it to a teammate to get a hat trick. So
yeah, maybe it's not all about the Ovi record. Like, they're winning games, and you know, there's other things I guess at stake as well. Good on Ovi. That was Ovi. You know, maybe he's feeling a little more comfortable about the prospects of getting the record, but you know, time's ticking on this year.
Misses by one goal.
Maybe he doesn't want it to spill over to next year.
So we'll Caps and Kings 10:30 on Sportsnet. We got a doubleheader in basketball on Sportsnet 1, Lakers Bucks and Kings and Warriors for you on Sportsnet 1. But it's been a while since we got to chat with our next guest, and there's lots going on in the baseball world. So let's bring in John Morosi of MLB and NHL Network. John, good to see you. How's it going?
Good to see you. I'm doing great. There I was a few weeks ago thinking that maybe the Wings and Leafs would meet in the first round. You have held up your bargain, and we have not. So I saw a win last night against Buffalo. They needed that, but still some serious ground to cover here with a tough schedule ahead.
I was going to ask you about the Wings at the end of this all, but you started with it, so we'll go there first. You know, trade deadline wasn't very noisy for them. I wonder if you were left wanting more, especially after seeing them kind of fizzle out, but there's still a chance that Atlantic and the Eastern Conference has got a couple spots up for grabs. But do you think they're going to be, you know, falling a little short this time around?
I think, unfortunately, they will. As I recall, sources say Dylan Cousins was traded to a team that was not the Wings and then scored the winning goal against the Wings. I think I have that right. So that was not optimal, I think, from the standpoint of the Detroit fan. But the truth, and again, it's similar to last year, Ailish, that there, but for a couple bad stretches, they would have been a playoff team last year. And the same thing is the case now, where a really bad skid not only might hamper their ability to make the playoffs, but really compelled Steve Yzerman to not spend serious assets to get someone like a Cousins or a Besser or someone that really would have elevated their offensive profile at the same time that Andrew Kopp was hurt. Goaltending has obviously been a little mercurial for them all season long. You look around at this division and you ask yourself, and now Ottawa's got the momentum. They're clearly not as good as Toronto is. They're clearly not as good as Florida is. So who are you better than? You got to be better than these really good teams. And I think the honest answer is you've seen other teams, and certainly those competing for the wild card berths too, that have simply played better. And while I think a lot of Detroit fans correctly would have liked to have seen more investment, maybe even earlier on in the season, once it actually got to deadline day, Yzerman looked around and said, this team is frankly not befitting the investment of major assets to go for rentals.
So maybe some pessimism with the Detroit Red Wing fan base, but maybe some optimism, and maybe I'm grasping at straws a little bit for the Toronto Blue Jays and their fan base. I mean, I guess you could look at it you know, one or two ways based on what we saw and what we've heard and what we've learned this week. But the fact that Vlad and the Blue Jays were only really $50 million apart, according to our Shai Davidi, I think has to be looked at it as least like there's a hope. I mean, we were basically saying, hey, Vladdy's done in Toronto after this year 2 weeks ago. And now if you're only three and a bit per year, $50 million total apart, how could you not find a way to get this done? Should Blue Jays fans after this week and the news this week, John, feel more optimistic about Vladdy and his future in Toronto?
My honest answer is no on this, that it really is where it was a week or 10 days ago or so, because I guess let's look at it this way. To the principals involved, the Jays knew what they offered and Vlad knew what they offered. And in Vlad's opinion, that really important one word answer to the question on his report day, were you close? And he said, no. So in his estimation, they weren't close. And so there's two ways to look at that. It's either the business negotiating close and then the emotional close. And if Vlad feels as though, hey, we had a conversation, we got to within what amounts to, Justin, as you point out, a few million dollars a year over the long term of the deal. And those 3 million, just to use a round number, it was too big of a gap to bridge when you had every chance to do so. And now I'm taking my talents to the open market. I think it's that it feels like, just based on how long this has been the case. Remember, there were the times when maybe he didn't have the best years where they could have approached them. If and I'm looking at it from his perspective, if their confidence in him was truly that high and that deep and that great, you could have wrapped this thing up years ago. And now it's only getting more and more expensive. So it's difficult, because I don't want to in any way place a negative context on this year. I really think that for Vlad, for Jays fans, for the front office, just appreciate 2025 for what it is and enjoy it and go all in. And then we'll see when the dust settles at the end of the year, how they feel about it all. But I really would take the opposite perspective, that if they couldn't get close when they were the only game in town, and again, close was the context that he was asked. Mm-hmm. And in his mind, they weren't close. And so if they weren't close when they were the only game in town, I have a hard time finding how they might be close when 29 other teams can have their chance.
So who do you think this was beneficial for, this release of more information where we have concrete numbers? We know how close, and I'm using air quotes for our radio listeners, close seems for, you know, three-ish and change per year, $50 million over the long-term contract. Does it make the front office look better that they offered a number that we can kind of hold our teeth into? Or does it like make Vladdy look better when he goes to free agency and he gets more than that? Is there a winner or a loser in this situation?
Yeah, that's a great question, Ailish. I do think it advantages Vlad in the sense that his ask was not outrageous. Mm. I really believe that was it a huge number? Yes, of course it was. But in the context of a Juan Soto universe, when you look at his contract, the request was somewhat within line of what you would have expected him to ask for or perhaps get. And I think that From the front office perspective, and this is where it gets difficult, they've made significant offers to other players, Soto, Otani, Burns, many others. I mean, they have been in there and trying. But now you get the one player, or the biggest player of the last couple of years, who is yours and only yours to speak with. And you aren't able to bridge that gap. And so I do think it adds to perhaps the unfulfilling nature of what the last two winters have been for the Jays. They have tried. No one can deny that. No one can criticize or take issue with their want to and how much time they have spent, hours and miles flown and traveled, everything else. They have been in the conversation and in the fight. But ultimately, you are judged on the deals that you close and the roster that you put on the field. And as we speak right now, the 2026 roster does not include Vlad or Bo, for that matter. Mm-hmm. And so I think that on that level, the release of the information is better for Vlad than it is for the Jays, because I think the industry also now has a sense of Vlad as being someone who is dealing with you fairly and forthrightly in terms of what the request was. And the Jays have done the same thing. It's just they couldn't bridge that gap. And ultimately, it may be another team that finds a way to bridge that gap in the wintertime.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you first saw the news and you're like, oh, they're going to be okay. They're going to get this done. How could you mess around over $50 million over 14 years? But if it's still the same situation where it's like, no, this is where we draw the line, then yeah, it does look better on Vlad, who's not asking for the sun, mm-hmm. the moon, and the stars. He's asking for a lot of money, but pretty much what everyone expected, at least going into the last-ditch contract negotiations this spring. When looking at this stalemate, like, is anything surprising to you? Are you surprised that $50 million is this thing that separates them? Are you surprised that, you know, Vladdy is kind of, you put this marker in place and that, you know, the decisions to be made of where this is going? Is anything come out as a surprise to you, John?
I suppose I was surprised a bit in the end that they weren't able to bridge that gap simply because of how much of the narrative for this team has been getting so close. And again, $50 million in any other context is a fairly significant sum of money. But when you look at it over the 14 or 15 years, then it, I suppose it minimizes a little bit. And I suppose when I looked at this context, I had felt going in that if a deal was within reach or within reasonable reach, even if you had to stretch for it, that you could get Vlad at a number that made sense but was south of what they were willing to give to Soto, that it would have gotten done. Now, the question I would have is again, you look at if you're not going to sign Vlad and you've got to eventually go into the free agent market to sign someone else, every agent in the business knows how much pressure there is on this front office to deliver at some point. And I should point out, they did deliver on Santander. That was a quality signing. Mm-hmm. Hoffman was a quality signing. Scherzer has looked really good. I know obviously there's a bit of a health issue now maybe with the thumb, but so far the deals they have made have been good deals. And this team on the field in the Grapefruit League looks actually pretty good and certainly healthier than a lot of other teams in their division, by the way, which is a very important distinction at this moment in time. So I guess the surprise came in that it was close enough and that the desperation or the need, the desire to land the big signing, that didn't overcome the Jays and say, yes, okay, we just got to get this thing done. They drew a line, and that is their right to draw the line, but they've had to draw the line a lot on a lot of signings that haven't quite gone their way in the last couple of winters.
I know the Blue Jays are trying to downplay what the significance or the extent of the injury might be, but a right thumb issue for Max Scherzer, is that the worst sort of issue that he could sort of encounter this spring?
I'm concerned, and again, I defer. Certainly Max knows his body so well, and he's the one that can really speak on exactly what's going on. But what I will say is this, that the issues that he has dealt with in recent years, yes, there was the back, but also there was the forearm that had the impact on his ability to grip the baseball. It was, if you go back and look at the stories written during the time he was with Texas, you would find plenty of quotes about gripping the ball and struggles with that and how potentially the rules of the game right now as they are have impacted pitcher injuries, et cetera. That is exactly where my thought is going on this, that Max had some issues with being able to just feel his fingers and properly grip the ball. Now, describing it as thumb pain, thumb discomfort, whatever it is, Max knows how important it is for him to be on the mound at this time of year and have a good start to the year. He knows that. Mm-hmm. And so anytime that a pitcher who has had some grip-related or extremities-related issues in the past has something that even is a cousin of other issues that he's had in the past concerns me. So I'm hoping that he's going to be okay, but just because it's in the same family of worries that he's had in the past does have me a little bit concerned.
The next question, I'm going to knock on wood that I don't jinx anything, but the Yankees, I think, have had maybe the worst luck for spring training health.
Wow, and, yes.
And jinx away.
Okay, well, I mean, like, jinxing it, like, as if the Blue Jays might
okay.
get
Never
injured.
Mind. No, because no jinxing.
No jinxing. Nonetheless, they have had a pretty tough start to spring training. You know, obviously, Gerrit Cole being out now for the whole season. Luis Gil injured. Stanton, not sure, like, what his status is in terms of his health, but doesn't seem like he'll be ready anytime soon. Has it changed your projection of this AL East standings? Because the Blue Jays were the bottom feeder, in a sense, in all the betting markets and all the preseason projections. But if the Yankees are going to have tough luck to start, is there more opportunity for the Blue Jays to gain some steam in the early part of the season, maybe be buyers at the trade deadline, and maybe have a little bit of a different outcome come October?
Yes, Ailish, that's spot on. I think the Jays, big picture here, this may sound funny, they've got a good chance to finish third. And third in this division could get you to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly it's good enough. It's when you're an all-in team, if you're in third place at the deadline, if you're a game or two above 500 and Vlad's in his last year and mm-hmm. Bo's in his last year, you got to go for it. This you have to go for it. So for me, I know that might not be the preference of this front office. And by the way, how about the irony of it was 10 years ago that Alex Anthopoulos went all in. And there were some that said, well, you left the cupboard bare and we don't have to go relitigate that decision 10 years later. But they might have to make the same decision and find this year's version of Tulo and David Price and see how things unfold. But the circumstances of this division, you're exactly right, have to me made me feel more bullish about the Jays and also the team that plays in Tampa Bay. As much drama as surrounds their stadium situation right now, look at their rotation, and they'll get Shane Baz back. Rasmussen comes back. McClanahan is there. I mean, there's a lot to like about this particular group with the Rays pitching. And I think the Jays have had a pretty solid spring from a health standpoint. Santander's coming in. Alan Roden is looking like someone that they're going to be able to count on during the course of the year, whether it's opening day, who knows. But there's something there with this Jays team, I think, with the way that they've played this spring that has me feeling more optimistic about 25 than I was when they showed up to camp. Because remember, it's not just the Yankees. The Orioles, Grayson Rodriguez has an issue. Kittredge, Gunnar Henderson has been limited with some different oblique issues or intercostal, if it is. Boston, Giolito's out. Bayo's out. There's still the drama going on with Devers, who, by the way, hasn't even played a spring training game yet. So you look around, there are issues with all these teams. And so I look at the American League East as being much more well-balanced in terms of you can make a case for almost anybody finishing first or fifth. I don't think the Yankees will fall that far, but there are issues with that team right now. And you pointed out about Stanton. The point I made to people this week and thinking about the Cole injury, when they were playing the Yankees in game one, before the Freeman homer, which is what we remember from that game, they had a 2-1 lead after six innings. And that 2-1 lead happened because Giancarlo Stanton hit a home run that hasn't landed yet, and Soto scored on that play, and Cole had six innings and one earned run. Cole, Stanton, Soto. None of them are on the roster opening day. And I think that the extent to which they had to rely on Stanton and Stanton to the World Series, when Judge didn't really have a great offensive postseason, now that, yes, they've got Bellinger, they've got Goldschmidt, they traded for Williams, I get it. But that team is not as good as the one that we saw them play against the Dodgers. So there's definitely spots in this division to make the playoffs if your team is not the New York Yankees.
Interesting with the Rays because short term, hey, they might be a more dangerous team in a smaller ballpark, in minor league ballparks with that pitching and maybe a little boost to the offense. Maybe they're a better team this year, but the news at the ballpark is, I assume, pretty devastating. The long-term future, the announcement today, what sort of shadow does that cast on the future of the Tampa Bay Rays?
It's a great question, and it's a sad one to have to talk about again because it's really they've not been able to advance the ball in the last decade. And a decade ago, we have talked plenty on this network in my belief in Montreal as a major league market. Well, unfortunately, Olympic Stadium's under renovations, and that's not even a viable option at the moment. So it's heartbreaking because they've all spent so much time on this. And I'm not one to say it's the fault of the club or the fault of the city. The bottom line is it's not working. And certainly the hurricane has a big piece of this as well. And so what we do know is there's no ballpark in St. Petersburg with this owner. Now, that sentence I constructed very deliberately because they're reportedly, Evangelica's reported on there being some pressure on Sternberg to sell. We don't know where that is going to net out. We don't know that if they have a good season in Tampa, if all of a sudden the Tampa government says, yeah, we can maybe find a reformulated plan on that side of the bay. So it's not that baseball is done in Tampa Bay. And in fact, the commissioner, according to what Evangelica has reported, is actually really bullish on Tampa as a long-term market. But the sport has to get this figured out because we know the big picture here. You've got the CBA talks coming up in a couple years. MLB would like to be able to expand. You cannot expand when this is the situation in Tampa because you can't start expanding into places that could be leverage points for the Rays to move to if there's no ballpark for them. So it does appear that right now, at least by the legal agreement, the city is refurbishing the Trop to play in it next year. Now, that's the current deal. But there's only 3 years left, 26, 27, 28, in the Trop to have the team still be in the Tampa Bay area. Do they leave and go somewhere else in the interim? Who knows? But this, it does have that feeling of what the A's went through towards the end. Could it be a distraction? Maybe, but a lot of guys there are on one-year contracts, and whether it's the Arizona Coyotes or the Oakland A's, professional athletes have for me, a really impressive way at being able to wall out a lot of that stuff and just focus on what's in front of you. And Kevin Cash, one of the best managers in the game, they've got the right leader. It's a difficult circumstance. I get it. But like a lot of things in life and in baseball and in sports, you got to focus on the year that's in front of you. And in the year that's in front of them, they're playing in Tampa in a ballpark that's probably going to be packed with a pretty good team. And so it wouldn't surprise me, that, like you're saying, if they end up having a pretty good year playing in Tampa.
Hard 30 seconds, John, but I got to ask you, we got Major League Baseball in Japan in 5 days. Will you be in Japan, and how awesome, if not, or if so, will it be to see Roki Sasaki make his debut? It's not Chiba, but the Tokyo Dome.
No, it's going to be unbelievable. Unfortunately, I will not be there. Last year I traveled to Korea, Taiwan, and Japan. So I've got a lot of my miles in me for my 2024 year, but I can't wait. I'll be up early to watch. And what I want to see is Seiya Suzuki actually taking that samurai sword that he took BP with to take that into a game. So it's going to be so cool the way that the MLB is going to present it with just the respect for the Japanese culture. It is, the Japanese baseball culture is so special. And for Sasaki to make his debut, it's going to be must-see TV, even at 6 a.m. for all of us in the Eastern time zone.
Well, you could always go to Sunday's Little Caesars Arena PWHL takeover game in Detroit.
That's right. You'll be there. You'll be there again?
I won't be there, but you could go, John.
I could go. So I'm running in a road race with my 12-year-old daughter and me and my dad. So three generations of Morosis. All moving very slowly in a road race. My daughter is the fastest, and my dad and I will be probably a few minutes behind.
Sounds awesome, John. Best of luck.
Thank you.
I don't know. Run safely.
Trust me.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you, Ailish. Thanks, Justin. I appreciate
it. We appreciate you coming on, John. We'll chat soon.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Sounds great. Thanks. Thank you.
John Morosi, MLB and NHL Network, helping us tee up a little bit of spring training, wrapping up. I think it's exactly 2 weeks now until the Blue Jays home opener. I am correct.
There you go. And good under point. A week until actual regular season baseball games. Cannot have a better start to the season than Dodgers and Cubs from the Tokyo Dome. That's awesome.
Yeah, you'll be tuned in. Time difference, doesn't matter. That's your guys.
6 a.m.
Okay, we have about 2 minutes, so we will pivot over to a little players' championship for you. This golf report is brought to you by your local Ontario Subaru dealers. Subaru, welcome to Uncommon. We are currently viewing day one of the Players' Championship first round, and our current leader is J.J. Spahn, 6 under. J.J. Spahn.
Yeah, tied with Camilo Villegas and Lucas Glover.
Oh, yes, three-way tie. But, I guess Spahn's already in the clubhouse.
Yeah, Spahn and Glover in the clubhouse. Yep. So Villegas could be the solo leader. Okay. He's heading to the island green now, so a bit of a treacherous shot
That's
ahead
a tough
for
go.
Him. But in terms of, like, big names on the board, Rory McIlroy is lurking. Mm-hmm. He's on 18 at 4 under, so 2 shots back. And Akshay Bhatia is also at 4 under. So,
There's been on
some
that
scoring
leaderboard too.
And some movement on the leaderboard. But a lot of guys are able to put in some red figures today. Adam Hadwin was
I wanted to get the Canadians. Yeah. When I wrote this before the show, Adam Hadwin was 3 under. He is now 4 under, but Taylor Pendrith has moved up the rank. He's T5 now.
I do actually have to correct myself. Villegas went off on the back nine, so he already dealt with 17.
Okay.
And now he's through 17 at 6.
A lot of moving pieces. We have a screen of the actual game right there. All of the first round leaderboard moving very quickly. So our Canadian high right now is Taylor Pendrith and Adam Hadwin, who are both 4 under. So.
And Corey Connors is in the red figures as well. So Canadians will be involved over the weekend.
Can I just read Jordan Spieth's crazy opening nine?
Sure.
He went birdie, eagle, par, par, double bogey, bogey. Eagle, bogey, birdie. Ends up 2 under of the day.
You erase the pars, birdies, and eagles, and it's like my scorecard.
Yeah, there you go. Lots of double bogeys. This golf report was brought to you by your local Ontario Subaru dealers. Subaru, welcome to Uncommon. We'll take a quick break, and we'll see you on Sportsnet 590 The Fan for our Molson Leafs hockey segment as we tee up the Panthers in town to face the Maple Leafs.